Hello, my name is Keith Larson. You're listening to a Solution Spotlight episode of the Control Amplified podcast, sponsored by Honeywell Process Automation. Today, I'm coming to you live from the 50th anniversary Honeywell Users Group meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, where I'm joined by Vishal Mehta, Vice President and General Manager for Honeywell Connected Industrial Solutions and Autonomy X Enterprise Consulting Practice, to talk about how energy companies are adopting a new framework for resilient operations. Thanks so much for joining me today, Vishal, and sharing your perspective with our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much, Keith. Yeah. I'm glad that you're here, and good to have this chat.
Yeah, it's nice to be here again. I've been to quite a few of these over the years, so it's wonderful to get the latest update from Honeywell and connect with many of your peers. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be in the industry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I wanted to express my congratulations to you and the entire Honeywell team on the 50th anniversary of this user group meeting. From the early days of the DCS, obviously HUG really set the standard for how process automation solution providers collaborate with their customers and other players in the space. So it's really been a model that the whole industry has adopted. So it's good to see that. But let's talk more recently, when resilience has really reemerged as a new top priority for industrial companies during the COVID era, I think is when it really became number one priority. And it's only seems like it's gotten more important since then. How has today's geopolitical and operational environment really further reshaped the way energy companies in particular think about efficiency versus resilience and other competing priorities, shall we say?
Yeah, no, Keith, that's a very important question. And in all my global travels, in the last, I would say, 3 months, resiliency is one word that I've been hearing a lot from almost every customer, right? Whether I'm in the Middle East, I'm in Asia Pacific, Australia, China, or even in Europe, and believe it or not, up north in Canada as well. And I would say there are three factors that are driving it. You know, COVID was like a once in a lifetime shock that came through. But I would say COVID was still very predictable. You knew that things are going to be shut down, demand is going to be lower, so you need to operate at X, Y, Z capacity. Right. So I would say that while there was a lot of unknowns and uncertainty from a health perspective, but from a predictability perspective, it was fairly predictable on how you want to run your operations when COVID happened. And then the recovery after that. But the world that we are living in today, you know, we have got a lot of, you know, quick policy changes that happen, quicker, you know, geopolitical events which are unpredictable. And that is impacting a lot of the supply chains, right? So recently we have seen the conflict in the Middle East. You know, it's not something that impacts just the Middle East, right? So it's it's impacting Asia Pacific, who used to get their crude oil supplies from that region, and now they have to pivot towards getting their supplies from somewhere else. So for example, now we are seeing a lot of American cargoes going from Latin American cargoes or African cargoes going to Asia. And similarly, even Europe had to pivot. But a lot of these assets are not designed to handle this complexity and variety of crudes or feedstocks coming from different places. So how do you then decide on how you're going to run your operations? So, you know, I come from the software world, right? So I look at all the level 3 and 4 software that sits on top of a control system. And the primary purpose of those softwares is optimization, is efficiency, is reliability, is uptime, and flexibility of operations. Right. And so, you know, you feel like you're in a world where you're seeing, hey, where am I going to get my feedstock from? How much inventory should I be carrying? Should I take a shutdown earlier than planned? Or the prices are too high, so I want to run, you know, at the max capacity, etc. So I think by resiliency, what I'm finding is, you know, if planning cycles were 3 months or 1 month, the planning and optimization cycles and requirements have now turned to, can I do this every shift?
Wow. Yeah.
Right. So that's a big shift that's happening. So people want to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
The second thing that we are seeing is, you know, a lot of the cyber events or even physical harm to assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be due to conflicts, it may be due to terrorism or cyber threats to critical assets.
Yeah.
And back in the day, you know, when I started my career, or, you know, you might remember your days, is, you know, a lot of things were instrumented and then a lot of that data was wired into a central control room. And when you are in a conflict situation, you have ultimately created a single point of failure.
Yeah.
Right? So if I can take out a control room, I can practically take out the entire asset.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or if I can have a denial of service cyber attack, you know, as you see happen during conflict regions, whether it's in Europe or in the Middle East or other places. You know, you could impact a lot of things downstream of it, right?
It was distributed control only in architecture, not in physical distribution.
So, which means, you know, that is what I call as, you know, the good old days of automation, right? When we are automating it and then we are trying, you know, I still remember I was so fascinated by control rooms when I started my career.
Yeah.
But now, I think the world from a resiliency perspective is the clients are talking to us around autonomy. And by autonomy, it's not just autonomy within the control room, but think of a refinery or a midstream pipeline or any of the assets in oil and gas or petrochemicals facility.
Yeah.
Essentially, they are individual plants who are connected to each other. So think of them as system of systems when you look at it from a software engineering perspective. Right, and so each system can be ran autonomously,
right,
but having constraints and dependencies on the other systems that they are connected to. Now we have enough power available from compute around storage, also high-speed networks, also for extremely high-latency networks. So I think there would be a move towards having software-defined autonomous systems which can operate systems on their own. So even if you take out a system, you would still have the other systems having the ability to, you know, work autonomously.
Yeah.
So I think that's that whole automation to autonomy, but with resiliency built in.
Yeah.
And the resiliency is whether it's geopolitical and, you know, headwinds which are macro to conflicts, you know, physical taking out assets or cyber attacks. And I think that's where autonomy is headed.
Is there a companion shift for increased resilience of operations by going to more of a distributed model from a more centralized historical perspective?
I think so. I think it'll be differentiated. You know, not everyone will do it at the same pace. But I think a lot of the greenfield facilities that might come, and not a lot of that is going to come in the developed markets, but we'll still see a lot of them coming in, a lot of the developing as well as high growth regions. I think that's where we'll see this happen a lot more. And I think it's just engineering evolution as well, right? You know, the cost of compute, the cost of connectivity has fallen to a point where, you know, I used to work in the EPC industry and we used to have something known as value engineering, which was a much hated word, which essentially was how do you take out things that are expensive, and usually things that were expensive used to be, you know, motor operated walls were considered expensive. You know, compute at the edge was considered to be expensive.
Right.
And so how do you, you know, just have an instrument which can quickly measure, but then I'll wire that data somewhere else and to do the processing in a control room versus now the ability to do it on the edge, because it's much more affordable to do it today.
Absolutely, that makes a ton of sense. Are there other lessons that organizations have learned from recent disruptions about the risks of having operations more centralized, and how should leaders think about the shift from centralized control to more distributed command models? I mean,
I think
you started to answer some of those questions there.
Again, you know, I think, like, you know, if you look at midstream as a thing, right? So midstream is a lot of pipelines, distributed pipelines, which are, you know, in hard to get it to areas, right? They're not They're long distance.
Typically remote.
Yes. Very remote, extremely remote. And then there are pumping stations, which are again remote, etc. And so you literally have, you know, those trucks driving and then going and doing repairs, etc.
Yeah.
And I think with connectivity coming in, with also satellite connectivity getting more and more ubiquitous, I think we'll start to see a lot of shift towards control at the edge.
Yeah.
So I think edge was considered more towards the IoT kind of a scenario. Mm-hmm. And we have seen a lot of good IoT use cases when it is in defined boundaries. So you know, if it's in a warehouse or in a factory, defined warehouse where connectivity, you can provide very good connectivity.
Yeah.
We have seen IoT work well. But again, a lot of that IoT data was brought into a central server or a data center to be then processed, logic applied, etc. And then you may or may not have closed loop control.
Right.
I think what I'm seeing that happening in the future is a lot more happening, all of this happening at the edge.
Right.
So compute, measurement at the edge, compute at the edge, logic at the edge, and closed loop control at the edge.
Yeah. And then some high level reporting back on status and things like that. But the actual, the heavy lifting being right where it's needed.
Right where it's needed. So that removes latency.
Yeah.
And I think what it also does is it brings in that element of resiliency. So let's say I'm not able to connect to that system for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That system has enough logic built into it to safely shut down, keep people and assets out of harm's way, without me having to send a person there. Right.
Yeah.
So I think these things also play into the resiliency side of things pretty well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. So what role then does real-time data and now AI and predictive maintenance methodology and condition monitoring, has that shifted in this connected plant distributed architecture, or is it similar to what we've been pursuing, at least on the predictive maintenance side? Is it still just glorified IoT, or is it something different? AI obviously changes things, but
That's a great question. And thinking about AI, you know, I think number one is there's a lot of AI happening right now around us, and I see a lot of that happen around still in the realm of probabilistic. I would call that as probabilistic AI, which, you know, but the kind of work that we do, or the industries that I support, these are critical infrastructure for any geography, country, etc.
That still need that deterministic core.
That's
where we've been for the last many years. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's about deterministic AI, something where if you are deploying an AI agent at the edge, and it'll never be one agent. It'll be multiple agents who work, who do specific tasks, who have the agency on those tasks. But then you still need, you know, a good orchestration to ensure that these agents work in their swim lanes, do exactly what they were meant for. And that system is deterministic.
Yeah.
I think the technology is getting there. I think a lot of it is around, can we have that deep domain knowledge to make sure that these agents or the AI will be deterministic, it will do the purpose for which it was built, and its ability to operate autonomously. And that's why I said, you know, when we started the podcast, you know, this is the best time that, you know, I'm happy to be in this industry, and the most exciting things are being built right now. And I think we'll see a marked shift in how these things will operate going forward.
So where is the best the earliest examples, where is this going to be implemented as a kind of demonstration going forward? What do you see as the real first opportunities
first
of this
opportunities,
ongoing wave?
I think our industry, so which is, you know, oil and gas, chemicals, petrochemicals, mining, pulp and paper, they are usually, you know, there are a few who are very early adopters, early movers, but most of the others, I would say a majority, want proven solutions.
Right.
So what we are seeing is we are seeing some traction with the the early movers. Some of them are in the Middle East.
Okay.
We've got a couple in the US who are trying it out. And we are seeing two kinds of use cases. One, they want to first try things out within the control room, right? So which is not exactly the whole edge piece.
Right.
But I think resiliency also has to be built around availability of future skills.
Okay.
And so, you know, I've got two sons. They don't, you know, and they are, you know, mechanical engineers, etc. But they don't want to come work in a plant anymore like you and me did back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And so, but then we have a lot of people who are getting to retirement, some taking early retirement, and with them, we are losing institutional knowledge.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right. So I think I don't think I talked about resiliency around the loss of institutional knowledge, which is happening around the world.
Yes, that's definitely the
case. And that's a very big one, because the kind of assets we run, we are not the best at capturing all the knowledge.
No.
Right, and then reusing that knowledge. So a lot of it, you know, when a person leaves, I think with them, a lot of the wisdom and institutional knowledge and judgment also leaves. So I think what we are seeing is good AI use cases around operator assist, trying to capture the knowledge, etc. So that is one. But we are also seeing a lot of it in the upstream business, where you have remote assets and hard to reach. We are also seeing action in midstream.
So
I think those are the first few use cases that we are seeing happen.
Where they're needed and can really be justified, because there isn't anybody there to
to
authorize the change.
Yeah.
It's truly remote.
And one of the challenges that I'm seeing, especially in these remote sites, is, and again that weaves back into the resiliency, is a lot of assets were designed for, let's say if we are in Texas, you know, things were designed for maybe, you know, 105, 110 degrees temperature for maybe a month at best in the summer. And now, you know, we could have like 2.5 months of more than 105.
I know.
Right.
That's what I'm glad I live in Chicago.
Exactly. So you're seeing extreme weather events, which were, for which a lot of assets were not designed for. And so when we have to put these kinds of edge compute, which is not in a controlled environment, so it has its own challenges, right? And so I think we are, but we are starting to see action. We are starting to see investments come in, and I'm sure that once we have a few success stories getting published, I think this could turn into a tsunami of requirements that will come in.
We'll try to help get the word out.
Absolutely.
So just to kind of bring things together, how should, you know, the C-suite leaders, you know, that are running businesses, how do they balance these opportunities for investment, efficiency, resilience, and innovation ongoing? What's the pecking order for industrial success?
I think if I have to give a few things for people to chew on, number one would be, this is the right time to start, right?
Yeah.
There is no better time to start than now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think choosing your use case effectively is going to be the most important thing, because, you know, a lot of clients that I speak to and the C-suite that I speak to, you know, a lot of the early use cases that were picked were, you know, if you pick the most difficult use case that even your best talent has not been able to crack and say that, okay, you know, show me how AI can do this better.
I don't think
that's the right place to start. I feel like, you know, pick things which are small, could be, you know, value can be delivered in a few months, right? Not 6 months, but let's say build something in 4 to 8 weeks. Try it for 2-3 weeks, see if you get value, and then push it into scalar.
Into broader application.
Absolutely. And then, you know, build it out. So I think number one is get started. And the second thing is, I think, you know, a lot of these assets, like I've been running these assets for many, many years. A lot of good work has already been done around optimizing them, efficiency, productivity. There's not a lot of juice left using the same technologies and the same software that you've been using for many years. Right, and I still remember, you know, if back in the day in 90s, if we bought a historian, you know, those companies are still running with the same software stack.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And so I think there's a great opportunity right now to start looking at how you want to do optimization, which is in hours and not months, mm-hmm. how you are able to run these operations more resiliently.
Yeah.
And so I think re-architecting some of the way you manage your things is going to be important.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's the advice that I would give, that I think the winners of tomorrow, you know, let's say if you're dollar per barrel, you know, used to be dependent on the Nelson Complexity Index. And I think the Nelson Complexity Index is soon going to see addition of element of the new age autonomy, which can, you know, how fast can you respond to changes in the market is going to be a big factor of whether your dollar per barrel is going to be the best in class or you're not going to get that much value out of it.
Yeah. And it seems that AI to just, you know, bring that operational reliability and resilience from, you know, the, something that would have shut you down a few years ago.
To be
able to suffer through more of those, that's going to have a grand net effect in a positive way.
Yeah, and maybe I can give you one quick example if that helps.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, when you look at traditional assets and process, right? So the way industry evolved was they would have operations department and they would have a maintenance and reliability department. And they were pretty siloed between each other.
Very siloed.
And there was not a lot of love for each other back in the day, right? Each one would blame each other. But then a lot of the software that got built was got built that way, right? So a lot of asset performance, CMMS, all of those things that would have been existing for the last 40 years.
In parallel with automation.
They all do very well in their own swim lanes. And then you have on the other side where you are monitoring process, like the chemical process, the thermodynamics, the temperatures, the pressures, optimization of set points. And there is somebody, a higher level person sitting with a lot of institutional knowledge who's trying to put these two things together and say, how do I manage my operation, overall operations based on changing market demands? I think what we are seeing, and that's what we are, like, I'm trying to drive, is how do we bring asset performance and process optimization together so that now we are working in the context of overall resiliency of your operations in a faster changing world. Right? And so that, to me, is a C-suite advice. And that's the power of data and AI right now that can drive that kind of autonomy.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, thanks so much, Vishal, for sharing your perspective with us today. Once again, this is Keith Larson, and you've been listening to a Control Amplified podcast with my guest today, Vishal Mehta, leader of Honeywell's Connected Industrial Solutions and Autonomy X Enterprise Consulting Practice.
Thank you, Keith. I really enjoyed the conversation today.
Me too, and congrats once again on the 50th anniversary of HUG.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Fun times. Thank you.
Take care.